No one from Torah in Motion is here to introduce me, and that's totally fine with me. And you know who I am, and that's why you're here. So we do not really need an introduction, and we'll just get to our subject for today. And today the subject is the last of the so-called Ten Commandments, as we discussed in the last couple of sessions. It isn't clear at all that we are dealing with the commandments, although last week when we dealt with remembering Shabbat, that's clearly a commandment. And it seems that the last of the commandments, you shall not covet, is a commandment. But as Gershon just said, for those of you here a couple of minutes ago, Gershon said that he once read an explanation or heard an explanation that actually you shall not covet is a promise, a reward, something good that will happen to you, a kind of result. It's a really interesting suggestion. Gershon, you won't be offended, I'm sure, if I say I don't really think that that's pshat, but you can understand why someone might come up with an explanation like that, because there are a number of problems related to this 10th unit here, you shall not covet. First of all, there is the problem that it seems to be of much less gravity than all of the other nine elements of the Decalogue. It doesn't seem to be up there with the honor of parents and with refraining from murder and theft and adultery. That's problem number one with Lo tachmod, with you shall not covet. And of course, problem number two is that it seems impossible. And depending, of course, on how we understand covet, and we're going to talk about that at some length. But if covet just means to desire something that isn't yours, then it's very difficult to imagine a human being who never desires something that that doesn't belong to them. So here are the verses. The verses appear in, as you see here, both in Exodus and in Devarim, and we'll talk a little bit towards the end of the class about the difference in. In Exodus, it says, you shall not covet your neighbor's house, you shall not covet your neighbor's wife, or his male or female slave, or his ox, or his ass, or anything that is your neighbor's. While in Devarim, they change the order. It begins with, lo tachmod eshet re'echa, you shall not covet your neighbor's wife. And then it uses a different verb, v'lo titaveh. In Shmot, they use the verb lo tachmod twice. In Devarim, the first time they use the verb lo tachmod, and the second time they use a different verb, lo titaveh. Is this of significance? We'll see in the continuation. So the most famous comment that attempted to deal with the second difficulty that I mentioned, which is, how does anybody actually expect that you won't covet something? Here's what Ibn Ezra wrote about it. People have been quoting this text of Ibn Ezra for many years. Many people are amazed at this commandment. They ask, how is it possible for people not to covet in their hearts all attractive things that appear desirable? We all see something and we say, gee, that's really nice. And is it so unnatural when you see something nice to think to yourself, I wish that that was mine? Well, Ibn Ezra solves it with a parable. Etain lacha mashal. A peasant of sound mind who sees a beautiful princess will not entertain any covetous thoughts about her in his mind, for he knows that this is an impossibility. There are things out there that we might want, but we know that they are impossible. And if we are of sound mind, we don't want something that it's impossible for us to get. And he continues, this peasant will not think like an insane person who craves to sprout wings and fly to the sky, for it is impossible to do so. Though people who have sanity don't really look at the birds and say, oh, I wish that I could be a bird. You know, that fleeting thought might cross your mind that wouldn't it be nice to be a bird and to have wings and to be able to just go and fly anytime you want. But when you think about it a little bit and you realize, you know, there are certain things, certain skills that human beings have and certain skills that other animals have, and it's not, it seems unreasonable for a person to be thinking all the time about sprouting wings and flying to the sky. And so that's the same thing that he said about the peasant who sees a very attractive princess and who knows that he might wish that he could marry that princess, but he knows that this is something impossible. And so he doesn't, if he's of sane mind, he doesn't think about this all the time. Now, just as a man does not desire to sleep with his own mother, although she may be beautiful, because he has been trained from his childhood to know that she is prohibited to him, so must every intelligent person, of course, even Ezra did not know about Freud, but he says, you know, that this is not a natural desire for a human being to have. And even if a man's mother is very beautiful, he doesn't have these kinds of desires. Why? Because he's been trained from his childhood to know that she is prohibited to him. So must every intelligent person know that people do not acquire a beautiful wife or money because of their wisdom or intelligence, but only in accordance with what God has apportioned to them. What I have in this world is what God gave to me, and what somebody else has in the world is what God gave to them. And so a reasonable person is satisfied with what God gave to them and is not thinking about the things that God gave to somebody else. And once a man knows that God has prohibited his neighbor's wife to him, she will be in his eyes more unattainable than the princess is in the eyes of the peasant. He will therefore be happy with his lot and will not allow his heart to covet and crave anything which is not his. And, Gershon said a few minutes ago, and as I just quoted Gershon as saying, you can kind of see this as being kind of a result. You know, if you actually refrain from theft and you refrain from adultery, then you realize that there are things that are yours and things that are not yours. And once that happens, then perhaps the result will be that you will be rewarded, that you won't have covetous thoughts in your mind. I don't know whether he sees this as a reward or just as a higher level, a higher madrega to which somebody aspires, not just refraining from theft and not just refraining from adultery, but not having the desire for these kinds of things. A number of years ago, I was asked to speak at a pre-Shavuot event at a junior high school, a parochial school, junior high school, and I decided that I'd teach this text. This must have been 20, 30 years ago. I taught this text to a bunch of junior high school students, and I discovered that a lot of them had, you know, there are different things that you could find difficult in this comment of Ibn Ezra, but the difficulty that they had was that they had totally bought into the American dream that somebody can be born in a log cabin and can rise up to become the president of the United States. And the whole premise here of Ibn Ezra's comment is that there is a stratified society here, and there are things that are possible for me, and there are things that are impossible for me because of my place in society. That's where he begins. And my place in society, also, Ibn Ezra is saying, is dependent on that which God allotted to me. So here's how Ibn Ezra tried to explain the idea. Before we go on, I'd just like to say one general thing about the mitzvah of lo tachmod. Let's say that you see a friend of yours and she is wearing a coat that she just bought, and you really like the coat. And you go up to her and you say, "Where did you buy that coat?" And she tells you the store where she bought that coat. And you go and you buy the same coat. I have never seen a Jewish text that would suggest that that constitutes coveting. The definition of coveting that we will see in every text here is wanting something that somebody else has, wanting it to be your own and not to be theirs, wanting to have something that that person has and for that person not to have the coat. Now, in ancient societies, we didn't have department stores that were selling, hundreds of identical coats to each other, and people were making their own clothing. And so there weren't very many possibilities of this nature, but wanting to have, you know, seeing that your friend has a Rolls Royce and then going out, if you have enough money, and you go out and you buy yourself a Rolls Royce, that does not constitute I've never seen any classical Jewish text talking about something like that in terms of coveting. And we'll see from the continuation of these texts also. And it's also clear here from Ibn Ezra that, you know, once a man knows that God has prohibited his neighbor's wife to him, she will be in his eyes more unattainable than the princess is in the eyes of the peasant. She's somebody else's wife. She isn't your wife. And you'll pardon me for putting it in these terms. I assume that Ibn Ezra is arguing that the person who wants the man who wants somebody else's wife doesn't want the other husband to have that wife. He wants to have that wife. That's the standard desire. And Ibn Ezra sees everything in terms of, you could see this person who might not have been the most satisfied person about his lot in life. That he says, you never acquire a beautiful wife or money because of your wisdom or intelligence. not a meritorious, not a meritocracy kind of worldview is Ibn Ezra's worldview. Everything that I have, it's because God wants me to have it. Everything that somebody else has, it's because God wants them to have it. And so the idea that I should want something that God has allotted to somebody else does not make sense. So that's how Ibn Ezra tries to, in the Middle Ages, to explain this text. Shmuel David Luzzatto Shadal in Italy in the 19th century offers I'd call it a little bit of a riff on Ibn Ezra's explanation. It's connected a little bit to Ibn Ezra's explanation, as he says at the end, but if you read it carefully, you see that he understands this mitzvah differently. Chemda is desiring something that is currently owned by others and is forbidden to us as it is not for sale. So, you know, if you see something that belongs to somebody else and it is for sale, then there's certainly nothing wrong with purchasing it. But it belongs to somebody else, and that person is not interested in selling it. We will see more texts that talk about this question about, is it problematic to want to buy something that belongs to somebody else? And then Shadal continues, although such desires arise naturally in people's hearts when they see desirable objects, it is within their power and will either to suppress the desire as soon as it is born and to put it far from their hearts, understanding that attaining the desired object is impossible, or to preserve the desire in their hearts and stoke its flame until they do something. So you see something that belongs to somebody else, and the desire comes into your heart, and they're not interested in selling it. And the desire comes into your heart. I wish that that was mine. Well, there are two things that you can do. Shadal says it's within your power and will to suppress the desire. How does he say it in Hebrew here? V'yado uberzono hu lahashbit hata'ava behivalda hu laharchika milibo. I can't have this. And then you think about it rationally. That's what a rational human being does, says Shadal. Notice Shadal is not putting it here in the terms that Ibn Ezra did of the stratification of society, that there's some things that people at various levels of society shouldn't be aspiring to. It's just understanding it isn't mine. And so I can sit around craving this item, or I could realize, well, it isn't mine, and I could go on with my life. And he says, Biado birtsono, it's something that is within your power to do this. And then Shadal explains what this mitzvah is doing at this point, after commanding, do not commit adultery and do not steal, thus forbidding to us anything of others. God told us that any possession of our neighbor must be seen by us as an unattainable object. And so once you've figured out that theft is not allowed, then when you see something beautiful that belongs to a neighbor of yours, we say, oh, but I already know that I'm not allowed to steal. Since God commanded us not to take anything that is not ours, we will not desire it. So, you know, there's this hopeful understanding of the power of human beings. Human beings can, they have the power. Biyado uvirtsono, it's within your power and your will to decide that you're not going to desire this item. He goes on, those who indulge in chemda despise the word of God. If you just continue to have these desires for something that belongs to something else and that isn't up for sale, then you are davar Hashem baza. injustice is a light thing for them within the realm of possibility. Once you know that it's forbidden, and then you continue all the time to be thinking about this, then you're very close to the possibility of injustice. Since there isn't a just way of acquiring this this item, and since you're unable to get that desire out of your mind, then you're pretty close to injustice becomes within the realm of possibility. But for those who fear the word of God, injustice is unthinkable. They consider that which isn't theirs as if it were in heaven. If it isn't mine, it's as if it's in heaven. And so I can't desire it. This latter group are content with their lot, rejoicing in their neighbor's well-being. I like this line from Chazal, that you're happy not only with your own lot in life, but if you see, you walk into your neighbor's new house and you see that it's a beautiful house. And, you know, there are a number of things that you could do. You could feel jealous and say, I really wish that I had a house like this. Or you could say to yourself, I'm so happy that my friends have such a beautiful house. And that's, Chazal says that that's what, hey, an observant Jew should do. An observant Jew should rejoice in their neighbor's well-being. You see something nice that your neighbor has, you're happy for them, loving them and beloved by them. That's the attitude we should have to our neighbors, not as that, you know, these are people who have things that I wish that I had, and now how am I going to try to get that stuff and make it my own? I should be loving my neighbors and hoping that they are loving me. And that's what this second group, who have realized that something that belongs to your neighbor is unthinkable for you. While the former group, the ones who just sit there thinking all the time about the about something that they wish was theirs and isn't theirs, while the former spend all their days in a tempest of desires and worries, coveting what isn't theirs and cheating their neighbors. Let's see the Hebrew there. Ze kol yamav besarat ha-ta'avot v'hada'agot chomed ma she'eino sholo v'chomes re'ehu. That's what happens if you don't get these ideas out of your mind. And then he finishes off in an unusual way for him. He writes, see the words of Ibn Ezra, they are pleasing. Chazal generally does not like Ibn Ezra. He has a lot of caustic comments about Ibn Ezra, but here he gives him a rare compliment, Na'emu. The words that Ibn Ezra said are very pleasant. Okay. So here we have two attempts of Jewish thinkers, Abraham Ibn Ezra and Shmuel David Lutzato, to explain this, the idea behind telling people that they shouldn't covet. But now we will see that actually in the halachic literature, there's a kind of surprising understanding of coveting. So here's what Rambam wrote in the Sefer HaMitzvot, which, as you may recall, he wrote in Judeo-Arabic, and so I did not feel that it was necessary to give you the Hebrew version here, which is also just a translation, but here is the English translation of the Judeo-Arabic. And Rambam did not make this up. Rambam is reflecting the Talmudic understanding of Lo Tachmor. And for those of you who haven't studied this issue in the Talmud or in Rambam, this is a warning to you. This is going to be a surprising explanation of what it means to covet. Rambam counted up the mitzvot, and here is negative commandment number 265. The 265th prohibition is that we are not allowed to use our thoughts to devise ruses for acquiring something that belongs to someone else. The source of this prohibition is God's statement, Lo tachmod, your neighbor's house. The Mechilta says, from the phrase Lo tachmod, I might think the prohibition applies even if you just feel envy. But another verse says, Lo tachmod kesev v'zahav alehem v'lakachta lach. Do not be envious of the gold and silver on them, on idolatrous statues, and take it for yourselves. Just as in that case, the prohibition applies only when, because of envy, people do something, so too here, it applies only when people do something. This shows that the prohibition forbids carrying out schemes to acquire for ourselves someone else's belonging that we desire, even buying it at a high price, is included in the transgression, lo tachmod. This is so different. First of all, this is different from the standard way in which people understand what it means, lo tachmod. Rambam says, lo tachmod actually means seeing something that belongs to somebody else and then figuring out a way to make it your own. And well, okay, so what are the ways of making it my own? One of them is to steal it. But the Torah already said you're not allowed to steal. So what else could I do? I could go and make them an offer that they can't refuse. And, you know, in our society, our general assumption is that everything has a price. And if I see something and I see the Rolls Royce that Susan just bought, and I decide that I want that Rolls Royce, and I go and I offer her $200,000 for the Rolls Royce, which is more than she paid for it, I assume. And she says, you want to give me $200,000? Fine, here it is. Rambam says that that constitutes lo tachmod. Buying it at a high price is included in the transgression lo tachmod. So there are two surprising things about this text. One of them is that Rambam is not talking about the question of just having a desire and having that desire inside of you. We'll get back to that question as we go on. And second of all, he's saying that if you figure out a way of getting it that constitutes, raising the price to a level that the person won't be able to turn you down, it's a very different understanding of ownership and of sales and of things like this. As I said, so much of our society seems to be premised on the idea that everything has a price. And, that the price that you paid for it is the price that you paid for it. And the price that you might be willing to sell it for, if I raise the price enough beyond what you paid for it, you'll probably be willing to give up anything. I think we all know people who go around knocking on doors in neighborhoods where they would like to live. I have a friend who acquired a house by walking around in a neighborhood where he wanted to live and said, I'm willing to make you an offer for this house. There's a knocking on doors of houses that were not for sale. And there seems to be this kind of assumption in our society that, if you come up with a price that somebody's willing to sell it for, then there's nothing wrong with it. And Rambam says that that's what constitutes lo tachmod. It's, fixing your desires on some item in such a way that, you're trying to figure out what you're going to do, and then you go and offer an absurdly high price for the item. That constitutes lo tachmod. We'll have more to say about this as we go on to see how others offer the same. Okay, so here's what Rambam writes. That's in his Sefer HaMitzvot, which is not Psak Halacha, but here's what he writes in his Mishneh Torah, which is Psak Halacha. Kol ha-chomed avdo o amato o beito v'cheilav shel chavero o kol davar she'efshar lo she'yiknehu mimenu v'yichbid alav b'reim v'yifzir bo ad she'lekacho mimenu af al pi she'natan lo damim rabim harei ze over b'lo ta'aseh she'ne'emar lo tachmod. They know over b'lav ze ad she'yikach ha-chefetz she'chamad. So, any person who sees something and wants it, and then importunes the owners, pleading with them until the owners agree to sell it to them, they've transgressed the rule lo tachmod, even if they paid a lot of money. And they have not transgressed this law until they acquire the item they desired. Rav Avraham ben David, who wrote glosses on Rambam's Mishneh Torah, thinks that Rambam went too far here. And he writes here that this is only the case if he did not say the lo amar rotze ani. If you actually manage, so Ravad has a different understanding, that I guess he's understanding that if I offered enough money that the guy said, I'd rather have that money than have this item, then there's nothing wrong with it. But Samad, according to Ravad, would be like kind of forcing somebody to be in a sales situation when they don't really want to be in the sales situation, and they just feel that they couldn't turn it down. You know, the way Rambam put it here, hichbid alav bereim. He has all sorts of people going, you know, I see that that car that Susan just bought, and I have all sorts of friends go to Susan and say, you know, Marty really wants that car. You know, he's pining away for that car. Won't you be willing to sell him that car? You know, that just all these pressure coming on somebody. So a sale that takes place because of some kind of psychological pressure is a sale that transgresses lo tachmod. Rabbi Yona Gerondi, who wrote the book of Jewish thought, Shari Tshuva, in the 13th century, expands on this idea, puts it a little different. Do not covet. We are here warned not to plot evil plots to acquire the field or the vineyard or anything else that belongs to a neighbor, even if we pay for it. If you yearn for a field or a vineyard or any other item that belongs to a neighbor, and the neighbor does not want to sell it to you, and if you beg your neighbor, who will be embarrassed to refuse you. So that, again, this is kind of putting your neighbor into this psychological situation where the neighbor would find it very difficult to say no. Then it is forbidden to beg, because then the sale was done under compulsion. So creating some kind of compulsion, even if it's psychological compulsion, that causes a friend of yours to sell something to you when they really didn't want to be doing it, that's what constitutes lo tachmod. One second. And if you who desire the object are an honest person who, when you ask for something, people don't turn you down. This is a really interesting twist here. To ask a favor of somebody who can't say no to you, Rabbeinu Yona argues that that's a kind of subset of lo tachmod. You're a really important person. And when you ask somebody for something, people don't turn you down. Then if that's the case for you, it is forbidden to ask a neighbor to sell you something or give you a gift unless you know that the neighbor will do this willingly and hold no grudge against you when they fulfill your request. So Rabbeinu Yona says that unless you know that the friend is doing this willingly, then it constitutes lo tachmod. If you kind of use your power position, without giving you any details, I'll share with you a discussion I remember having with my wife a number of years ago. You know, I wanted to ask somebody a favor, but I remembered that I had done him a really, really big favor recently. And I said to my wife, I don't know if it's reasonable for me to ask him for a favor because he can't turn me down after the favor that I did for him. And my wife said to me, oh, come on, Marty, you've been friends with that person for 10, 20 years already. You've been doing lots of things for each other. And, you know, should stop having these cheshbonos, these calculations about you did him a favor. And so therefore he'll have to do you a favor. But I always think about that issue about asking somebody for something when it's difficult for them to say no. And Rabbeinu Yonah says that that's a kind of subset of lo tachmod. It's getting people to be in a situation where they're going along with what you want, but they're not doing it they're not doing it totally willingly. Okay, so you can either like or not like these explanations, but what's totally surprising, again, unless you've studied this in the Talmud already, you know, the Talmud says a line, lo tachmod le'inchi below damim mashmet. People think that lo tachmod means taking something without paying for it, but actually that isn't what lo tachmod means. Lo tachmod means also when you pay for it. Now the question is, does this imply then that there is nothing wrong with having the thought as long as you don't act on the thought? Well, Ibn Ezra says, many have said in his commentary on Devarim, many have said that there are no sins in the thoughts of the heart, or machshavot halev, it probably means the mind, not the heart. No reward for them and no punishment. There are many proofs to refute them, but I will not go on at length. So Ibn Ezra says, yes, the Torah does care about the thoughts of human beings. And this question about whether lo tachmod actually is a mitzvah that is only about that which is going on inside of your mind, or whether there is some action that is being outlawed, led to a kind of interesting kind of dispute, particularly in modern history, between Christian and Jewish thinkers, with some Christian thinkers arguing that Judaism is a religion that only cares about action and that doesn't care about what people think. On the other hand, they saw Christianity as being a religion that also tries to deal with what people think. An interesting thinker, Rabbi Benno Jacob, he was a Reform rabbi from Germany who moved to the United States. He was quite the interesting person. He was, from a point of view of halakha, he was a radical reformer. He was among the Reform rabbis who advocated moving Shabbat from Saturday to Sunday. There was only a minority of Reform rabbis who advocated that move. On the other hand, from the point of view of study of the Torah, he had an extremely conservative and traditional attitude towards study of the Torah. And he also, as you'll see from this text here, he was a big defender of Judaism against accusations that some Christian thinkers leveled against them. And in writing, he has an article in the Jewish Quarterly Review in 1923 about Jewish and Christian interpretations of the Ten Commandments. And in the section of that article that talks about Lo Tachmod, which you have here in front of you, here's what he writes. More serious is another Christian attack. In this commandment, in Lo Tachmod, it is maintained not the covetous desire, but its satisfaction is forbidden. Hamad meaning not desire and covet, but bring to oneself. The point involved is not a sinful desire, but a knavish act. So the Christians say, oh, Jews don't care about the sinful desire. They only are worried about the knavish act, about the illegal action of trying to get the person to sell it to me when they don't want to sell it to me. And then Benno Jacob writes, the real motive for this assertion is religious historical theories, which are made to rest on lexical, exegetical supports that. He says, this isn't true. That isn't what Lo Tachmod means. He's disputing the understanding of Lo Tachmod that we just saw in Rambam and in Rav Yona Girondi. He says, this isn't true. And it's only the Christians made this up because they want to say that Jews really don't care about things like thoughts. They only care about actions. It is not true that the Old Testament and its God are indifferent towards sentiment or inclination and judge only opus operatum, the way that things are done. The Old Testament knows exactly the human heart and its cogitation, and it judges it inexorably. God knows of man that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. Because the law is aware that action springs from the mind and receives from it direction, aim, character, and value, therefore it addresses itself with its exhortations to the heart so that it be one with God, that it should not be misled and yield to bad impulses. He says, of course, the Torah talks about what a human being should feel and should think, because, of course, our feelings and our beliefs lead us to action. And so Benno Jacob said, this is just a Christian maligning of Jews when the Christians say, oh, the Jews are only interested in the in action, and they aren't interested in they aren't interested in a law that deals with thought. A retired scholar here from the Hebrew University in Jerusalem, Professor Alexander Rofe, wrote an article one time called The Tenth Commandment, in which he summarizes some of the disputes that occurred in the 20th century between Jews and Christians about this commandment. And Rofe writes, this led to an interesting reversal, with Christian commentators today holding to the halachic interpretation of the biblical text, while Jewish authorities dissociate themselves from it. So the Rofe says there are a number of Christian thinkers who say, see, the Old Testament is only interested in action, and that's as the rabbis explain, that's what Lo Tachmod means. And then along comes a rabbi like Rabbi Benno Jacob and says, well, no, of course the Torah is interested in the thoughts of a person's heart. Alexander Rofe saw this as being an ironic kind of development, that the Christians want to say that that's actually what the Old Testament means. That's the pshat of the Old Testament, and we need the New Testament to get us to be thinking in terms of ideas and not just in terms of actions. And many modern Jewish thinkers saying that Lo Tachmod is referring to thoughts. But if you think back to Ibn Ezra, and you think back to Shaddal that we saw in the beginning of this session, they were talking about thoughts. it's a very curious development with Rambam arguing that lo tachmod only applies if you actually take action to get the item from another person. That's not the it's not the standard direction of interpretation in Jewish circles. And in a minute, we will see that actually that isn't the total picture of what Rambam said either. Here is what Rambam said before. We saw Rambam talking about negative commandment number 265, which was lo tachmod. And here we find Rambam talking about negative commandment 266. And here's what he says about it. The 266th prohibition is that we are forbidden to occupy our thoughts with the desire for someone else's property and to develop a craving for it, since this may lead us to carry out some ruse to acquire it. The expression used for this prohibition is God's statement in Devarim, lo titaveh beit re'echa. So Rambam is saying that there, this whole thing, this whole dispute that you can find with Jewish and Christian thinkers in the 20th century arguing about what does Judaism really say about coveting, in the bottom line, it's a non-issue. Because Rambam says, yes, lo tachmod means taking action to acquire it, but there's another mitzvah, which is lo titaveh, so that this is how Rambam, and he's not the first to suggest this idea, this is how he solves that change in language in Devarim, that it says lo tachmod, and it also says lo titaveh. These two prohibitions, lo tachmod and lo titaveh, are not synonymous. That's what we all thought when we looked at Devarim, that we saw that it said twice in Shmot, lo tachmod beit re'echa, lo tachmod eshet re'echa, and then we got to Devarim, and one time it said lo tachmod, and the other time it says lo titaveh. We thought that they are synonymous, that just, it's what Fowler once called in the Elements of Style, elegant variation, just thinking that it's more elegant if you don't use if you don't use the same verb twice. But Rambam says, no, these are two separate halachic categories. The first prohibition, lo tachmod, forbids acquiring someone else's belongings in the inappropriate manner that Rambam described, that we saw beforehand, that Rambam had written about by bringing psychological pressure or paying well beyond the price, causing somebody to sell something that they did not want to sell. Well, the second, lo titaveh, prohibits even having the feeling of desire and envy. So in the bottom line, there is no question, Rambam says, and I think all people, all Jewish thinkers would say, that there is a mitzvah about thought. As Ibn Ezra says, some people think that there are no mitzvot about thoughts. Yes, there are mitzvot about thoughts. And even Rambam here is writing that there are mitzvot about thoughts. And here's yet another Ramban, Rav Moshe ben Nachman, writing about this same issue, writes, he added an explanation of the commandment, you shall not covet, by mentioning the neighbor's wife first, whereas in the book of Exodus, the neighbor's house is stated first. Why? For the imagination of man's heart is evil from his youth. Yetzer lev ha'adam ra minu rav, with respect to women more than anything else. He further explained that included in the term of coveting is even mere desire, that lo tachmod doesn't just mean having the thought and acting on it, but even just having the thought is forbidden. That's why it writes lo titaveh. That's a person who desires to rob anything from a neighbor, but is unable to do so because the neighbor is stronger, or because in their locality there is fear of the government. This is Ramban opening a window to us on life in the Middle Ages. There were many localities where there was no fear of the government, where there was no real rule of law. But if you happen to be lucky enough that you're living in a locality where there are people who fear the law, many of you here, especially those in Toronto, know Dr. Seymour Epstein, who a great Jewish educator who was in Morocco for a number of years working for the Joint Distribution Committee. I once asked Seymour, is there much crime in Morocco? And he said to me, well, actually, we never locked our home in Morocco, because nobody steals in Morocco, because, you know, if you steal, they're going to chop off your hand. And so that's a very strong disincentive to theft. And so, you know, there's fear of the local government. So those are the reasons why might I refrain from stealing something that belongs to, I could refrain because I know that it's asur according to the Torah, or I could refrain because I know that my neighbor is stronger than I am. And if I go into their house and try to steal something, I could get in trouble because they're stronger than I am, or because I'm afraid of the government. But if it's only those things, fear of the neighbor or fear of the government, but I'm just sitting there thinking all the time, I wish that I could steal this, then I am transgressing this commandment. So we see that all Jewish thinkers, essentially, the Sofos shel Davar and the final analysis, come to the conclusion that thought of theft is also not allowed. Thought of wanting something that belongs to somebody else to become mine. And now I'll take a little look at the chat and see what comments or questions we have here. Does this mean that it's okay to covet something that belongs to somebody who's not a neighbor? No, Rea just means another human being. I don't think, you know, we often translate it as neighbor, but it just means another human being. Successful entrepreneurs who covet the impossible, they are successful not limiting themselves by impossibility. That's true enough that our society is based on that kind of assumption, but it looks like Rambam and Rav Yonah Gibrondi are trying to advocate for a different kind of society, and I don't know how much they would like the entrepreneurial kind of society. Kathy writes, is the intent in coveting different than wishing, dreaming, or wanting? As in the previous comment, we do reach for the impossible often. Look at AI, but coveting implies lusting, as in the verb in Devarim, wanting some specific item that belongs to someone else and being intent on getting it. It is not thought then that then potentially leads to illicit action. You're right, Kathy. And in the end, we saw that most Jewish thinkers, I think perhaps all Jewish thinkers, think that this kind of lust thing is something unhealthy, and it is something that is forbidden by the Torah. Ovadia, Dr. Homer Brooks writes, I'd always heard the coveting was much more than desire, rather starting to plan to obtain it from them. Yes, it would seem like that's what Rambam is saying. And does the Torah regulate emotions, thought? I guess you asked this in the beginning of the session, and then we saw that actually that becomes a central question in the interpretation here. Lo titaveh perhaps means do not cross boundaries of desire, Gershon suggests. Very possible. Let's apply to kashrut. If I really want your lobster tail, have I eaten it or committed a sin? Now when I plan to grab it and eat it when you get up. You know, so Rambam has a very interesting discussion in Shmona Prakim about the question of desiring something that is forbidden. And he says that there's a big difference between desiring something that is forbidden, that is in among the ethical laws, that a person who desires theft or desires murder, but refrains from theft or murder, he sees that as being something not good. But he says, but if somebody desires basar b'chalav, desires a cheeseburger, and then says, afshi v'afshi v'alma eseh shakadosh baruch hu gazar alai, I'd really like to eat a cheeseburger, but I can't because the Torah says that I can't. He says there's nothing wrong about that. And in fact, from a reading of that text of Rambam, he might be saying that that's preferable to feel that way. That's something that I would like, but I'm not going to do it because God said that I don't do it. But it would be better to reach the level that you are not desirous of murder, and that you are not desirous of theft. Lo Tachmod, Kathy says, does not seem to be synonymous with do not be jealous. I agree. This does not seem to be the Torah's way of regulating jealousy, but rather the idea of coveting that which belongs to a person and then devising a way to get it. I agree with you entirely, entirely, Kathy. And you know, I don't think that there is a specific mitzvah against being jealous. I don't think it's a good thing to be jealous, but I don't think, you know, if I see that you have a car that I wish that I could afford, but I can't afford it, and I'm jealous, I don't think that that constitutes a transgression of one of the Ten Commandments. But if I'm sitting around trying to devise ways, how am I going to do this? That seems to be different. M.J. Frankel writes, I saw a similar argument. The Christians interpret Jewish Lo Tachmod as driven by its petty concerns with legalism rather than the heart's thoughts. Yes, that's right. That's precisely what you can find in various Christian texts. Two other arguments listed by Rofe in favor of Talmudic interpretation. The command in a series of negative actions being prohibited is odd if suddenly talking about thoughts. And two, why pick on coveting if you're going to outlaw thoughts? Jealousy, which can lead to stuff like murder, might seem a more logical choice. Very good. Okay, those are two possible arguments. Okay, I'd like to wish you all well. I'm sure that I'll be back at Torah Motion at some point with some other series because Rabbi Kelman keeps asking me to do it. I don't have any details for you, but I'd like to wish you all, well, first of all, a happy Yom Yerushalayim. That's what it is here in Israel already. It is now Yom Yerushalayim and a Chag Sameach for Shavuot coming up in a week. And I hope that you'll have something to think about when you hear the Aseret HaDibrot being read in synagogue on Shavuot. All the best to everyone here. Bye-bye.